Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your time. There are a few things you can do to stay in the loop and help us keep Chatter going. Follow us in all the usual places, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Download us wherever you get your podcasts and review us on Apple if you're feeling kindly. Join us on Patreon for great bonus footage from the show, including rapid fire questions with the featured authors, pre and post show chatter, and whatever else we edit out. Go to chatteronbooks.com and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. You get a sneak peek at upcoming authors. And if you're buying books, please try bookshop.org. It's an easy way to buy books online and support your favorite independent bookstores and affiliates like Chatter on Books. Most importantly, stay in touch. Send any questions, comments, ideas, insults to info@chatteronbooks.com.
Chatter on Books. It's Cliff Notes for book clubs. Why read the book if you can listen to Chatter on Books? I'm Jamie McIntyre, your announcer, but you don't care about that. Here again is your host, Tori Clark.
Okay, everybody, welcome to Chatter on Books. We're going to get rolling here with Manny because we have very limited time with him. Manny Jennings, some of you may know, is the youngest author we've ever had on Chatter on Books, which is pretty spectacular. He happens to be related to somebody named Claude Jennings, but we won't hold that against him.
Not sure.
Even though,
is.
Manny, we had to work really hard to get you on the show. And everybody, for our Patreon patrons, thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well all over the world. The tens of thousands of you, welcome. And Ana Reyes is trying to join us. There
she's coming.
Yay.
We see her. Yay. Hey, Ana, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. So sorry about that. I don't know what was going on with the Zoom.
No worries. I had trouble as well. Welcome. We're glad you're so glad you would come back. It's such a good sign.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Ana, you remember David Aldridge and Claude Jennings.
I do.
And the other person, our first author interview this evening, is Manny Jennings, who is a friend of the show. Manny, I followed your golfing career for some time. I've been trying to work on an NIL, name, image, and likeness sponsorship for Chatter on Books. But again, your agents do not respond very well with this. So we'll talk about that after the show.
It's mostly dad.
Oh, yeah. He's the obstacle to everything, Manny. So I'm going to hold this up for our Patreon patrons. It's Okay to Be Me is Manny's book. It's his debut book. It is fantastic. I've already bought about 10 or 15 copies, Manny. And so thank you for joining us here. And tell us what inspired you to write this book.
So my parents brought the idea up to me. Mm-hmm. And at first, I didn't know if I wanted it to do it because, like, it's my story. It's kind of personal to me. But then, a while later, I was like, I want to write the book. So, yeah.
Great. Tell us what it's about.
So it's about a kid who stutters, and it's me. It talks about my story of stuttering, and it also talks about what other things I like to wear bright colors, and I have a cool YouTube channel in my messy room. So, yeah.
Spectacular. Mr. Aldridge, over to you,
my friend.
Look,
I have to ask you this, because you are so brave, because when I was your age, I didn't want anybody to know anything about me because I thought people would, like, not understand, or they might make fun of me. And I just wonder, how did you decide I am going to tell people something really personal about me because I think it can help other kids?
It was mostly just my parents putting confidence in me, and they were also kind of like pushing me to like kind of write the book, but to inspire kids, and I also wanted to inspire kids, but they were just trying to push me to like try to write the book,
That's so awesome. That's great.
Congratulations. That's such a huge accomplishment.
Thank you.
Ana, were you writing books when you were 10 years old? I can't remember.
I was not. I wrote my first story at 11, but it wasn't a book. And I think that's so cool that you were able to write a whole book and get pictures. How did somebody help you with the pictures, or how did that come about?
My parents found the illustrator, so I had nothing to do with that. That was all parents finding the illustrator and the illustrator making the pictures.
It's a tremendous likeness of you, Manny. Maru Salem Vargas is the illustrator. It's really, really spectacular. And I've read before and heard how much you like bright colors. And I love that the book is filled with these brightly colored illustrations. And Manny, I want to ask you something. I read some of your interviews, and listened to your interview on WTOP, which is so cool. People in this town will kill to be on TOP. And you talked about a woman at one of your events. You've gone to schools and talked about your book and what you overcome with your stutter. There was a woman who talked about her kid reads the book every night. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that.
So this kid named Jax, he got the book. And when he first read it, he saw that I stutter. And he was like, oh, and he was like, oh, I stutter too. So, like, he was finding all of these similarities to us. And his mom said that he's like a famous person to me. So
that's so great.
Oh, one of our favorite listeners and one of the big time Tony Kornheiser listeners is Bob Walsh, who does the Summer of Littles reunion. He's fantastic. And he reached out to me to get to your dad saying he had a really good friend who had a stutter growing up and overcame it as this incredibly successful business person. And he wanted to get a signed copy from you to send to his friend, which is pretty spectacular.
I will sign that tonight.
That is so great.
Manny is so good at this.
That is so great.
He's so good at this.
Manny, I wanted to ask you, like, you know that the president stutters, right? President Biden. And I just wonder, like, he reaches people all over the world because he's the president, right? And he has that platform. What kinds of people do you want to reach with your book?
I want to reach anybody who has a stutter. If they're like my age or younger, if they have and they have to wear braces or glasses, I just want them to feel inspired when they read the book and confident.
That's so great. You are so confident. God, I think I gained confidence about 3 weeks ago is when I started becoming confident. And so the fact that you haven't done it already is just awesome. That's great.
And Manny, you've already, I know the book is selling. I know you're doing all these interviews and you're being asked to go to these schools. You've already inspired so many people, which is fantastic. So we know your time is dear here. What's next? Do you think about writing other books?
Yes, I do. I do.
What about?
We don't have the idea yet, but all I know is that we are going to write another book.
Excellent. Will you promise us now, this Monday evening as we're taping this, that you'll come back with the next one as well?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I can get your contact information, Manny, because it's really hard to get through your agents.
Yes. Yes.
Very hard. Yes. I like to get personal numbers, you know. All right, everybody. The book is It's Okay to Be Me by Manny Jennings. It is phenomenal. Please, please, please go out and get this from your favorite independent bookstore or pretty much anywhere. Just go get this book. Manny, thank you for your time, my friend. Good. Are you playing golf yet? Is the season upon us? Is it golf time yet?
April is okay. When golf season starts for
good
April.
Luck. We will watch on, we'll work on that name, image, and likeness sponsorship. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Bye,
see you
Manny.
Later.
That was awesome. Thank you for walking me through the interview.
Again, this show is, you know, it's now. Wonderful and interesting and entertaining and often just completely overwhelming. Someone like that, Claude, you can just shut your ears because you'll just swell up with pride about your son.
But yeah, it's right.
Yeah, it's no. Absolutely remarkable.
Again, I grew up, I think I talked about this. I grew up with a stutter. My wife grew up with a stutter, something we didn't even know about each other until years after we got married and really? Manny started to stutter. And then we told each other, oh, wait, you did? Yeah, me too. And, you know, as you can see, the boy doesn't lack confidence. And we just wanted to instill that in him. And, you know, it was Sierra's idea, like, hey, we should do a book about this. And so we had him sit down and just kind of share what he wanted to be in the book and hope that, you know, the confidence that he has will will go out to other kids and adults too. I mean, you know, people are insecure about all kinds of things, you know, and hopefully seeing a 10-year-old say, yeah, I stutter, but it's fine, will make someone else feel like, ah, it's okay. You know, whatever I deal with, you know, it's part of who I am. It's not the only thing about me. It's just part of who I am. You know?
That's the thing. And I should have made him walk through the book more, but he talks about all that. We know Manny loves golf. He loves football. God help us. We've got to stop that.
Got to stop that.
Got to stop that. No, it's terrible. It's terrible. I love that he loves bright colors and bright clothes because I love that. It's really pretty spectacular. So congratulations to the whole family.
You. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us have him for an interview.
Well, with being on with you and Mr. Aldridge there, no one can tell him anything now. I mean, there are several nights where he's peeking over my shoulder, just looking, and he's like, oh, there's Miss Tori, there's Mr. David. And so he's huge fans of you both. And,
He's Anna, he's lying. The only thing Manny cares about with regards to this show is David Aldridge. The only reason he agreed to be on this show was because of David.
Well,
okay. But one last thing gushing about Manny. If you, if people have time, go order the book. It's Okay to Be Me. And the YouTube channel is called Manny Time, right?
Correct. Manny Time. That's,
his interactions with some of these pro golfers is insane in that it's just completely confident, completely relaxed. And the way he approaches them when they're coming down the line and stuff like that, they want to talk to him.
Yeah, he went viral with Ricky Fowler last year when they were in D.C. for a tournament. And it was totally crazy to watch. It was nuts. But
I think one of those Netflix series featuring Manny.
That would be great. Netflix, if you're listening. You know, with Full Swing, if you need a kid to do some fun interviews with players, you know, reach out.
Full Swing, the junior version.
Right.
Junior version. All right. Okay, before Amakatsu joins us, and by the way, we're now catching up. Amakatsu, who is one of our favorite authors and clearly our favorite intel person, is going to be back talking to us about Red London. But Ana Reyes, thank you so much for coming back. It makes me feel so good because I think, okay, when she was on as a featured author, it must have been okay that she wanted to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I felt like this was such a fun conversational podcast, and I just love including the interview that you just did. I wasn't expecting that, but that was really inspiring. He gives a great interview, and I feel like he really does. Yeah, awesome. And getting to see this young person putting a book out, like that makes my whole day.
Excellent. Really cool. We're glad you're with us. I know you're just such a sports geek, Anna. That's a joke. David is joining us from Nats spring training, right, David?
Correct. West Palm Beach, Florida.
West Palm Beach. How is West Palm Beach?
It's nice now. It was cloudy most of the day, but it's sunny and beautiful now. And I'm in Florida, so I can't really complain.
Is it easy or hard? Anna is a big March Madness fan. She wants to do nothing but geek out about the upsets of the first couple of rounds.
I'm so sure.
And you know, she's going to share a bracket with us. Great. Is it hard to be focused on spring training when March Madness is upon us? Because that is one of the greatest sporting things of all time.
No. Sports people compartmentalize. You can talk about everything at the same time. So spent half of my time in the clubhouse talking about the tournament or the playoffs or what the Commanders are doing. It's the gig, you know. You have to kind of know a little bit about everything. So at least that's the gig I have.
Give us 30 seconds or less on why we should care about the Nats this year.
Well, because they have it's really been the last 2 years. You know, they've torn down the team that won the World Series in 2019 and was a remarkable team. And but they went, I guess, as far as they thought they could go with it. And they've, you know, they made the big trade last summer for Soto, and now they've got some very good young players in the positional part of the organization. CJ Abrams is going to play shortstop this year. He's very good. He's got a chance to be really, really good. And they've got a lot more people in the minor leagues coming up, but they're going to struggle this year. I mean, it's not a secret. They're in the toughest division, I think, in baseball, and it's going to be hard for them to win a lot of games. But you can appreciate a team that's rebuilding and watch players when they're young as they start their careers and hopefully get better. That's what I would be looking at if I were a Nats fan.
Okay, Anna, I'm going to throw this to you. This is the last sports question, and then we'll go to Alma, which is so great to see you, Alma. Anna, I'm an amateur sports fan. I'm a really good, very enthusiastic amateur sports fan. March Madness is one of the greatest things. It transcends everything. Does it, for you, who is not a big, you are not a big sports fan, not deep into this, does March Madness even seep into your being and your environment, or not at all?
It's sort of like another language. Like the words kind of pass by me and I hear them, but I don't really know what they mean.
Can you appreciate, and it must break through because, you know, for instance, you know, any news outlet has nothing else to cover. So they say the big upsets in March Madness. So the first couple of rounds are always spectacular because these tiny little schools you've never heard of beat these giant behemoths in college basketball. Does that break through to you?
I think on sort of an intellectual level, but I have a hard time grasping the excitement.
Oh, okay.
People get really excited about it and it's very abstract to me, but I appreciate that other people are passionate about it. I just can't find that passion within myself.
All right. Okay, so Anna, you went to UMass, right?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the most famous player who played at the University of Massachusetts is a player named Julius Erving?
The name, remember that name.
Rings a bell.
And then you got your MFA from LSU, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the most famous player to play at LSU. Well, there were two. One is named Pete Maravich, and the other's named Shaquille O'Neal. So
definitely heard of Shaquille O'Neal.
So you went to the same school with Shaq. You're the same. It's the same.
There you
so
go.
You can root for LSU the next time they make the tournament.
There you go. Here's the equivalent. Fairleigh Dickinson beat who in the first round, David?
Oh, Purdue.
Purdue. Yeah. Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue. Alma has been with us before, so she appreciates that this is a sports show for at least 5 minutes. Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue in the first round. That's like a woman who has her debut novel getting picked by Reese Witherspoon for one of her top, for her book club.
Crazy.
Pick.
Who could
when
that, who
the Ken
could
that Follett's, Susan Orleans, you know, name some incredibly established multi-gazillion sold book author. And then along comes this person called Anna Reyes and gets Reese Witherspoon to pick The House in the Pines.
Must be nice.
As her book. Right? David, isn't that a good comparison?
That's a fairly apt comparison. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Enough for chatter on sports. Shall we move on? Okay. Wait, I got book news. Wait, I have to do book news. Then we can talk to Alma. Book news is Silas House from Lark Ascending. Great guy. Won the Southern Book Prize Award. We were very happy. He and Brendan Slocum were finalists. Silas won it, which is spectacular. It puts him in the pantheon of Pat Conroy, Carl Hiaasen, Tony Horowitz, great people. So we're very, very happy for him. And then also, and I'll try to remember this at the end, Claude reminded me, Chatter on Books is going to be at the Gaithersburg Book Festival on May 20th, where they have dozens and dozens of fabulous authors and events, huge tent with huge used books, which people love. It's out of Borough Park in Gaithersburg. It's free. It is spectacular. Very confident this year will be less than 105 degrees. So we encourage everybody to come out.
Yeah, Amakatsu,
welcome back to Chatter on Books.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here. I know nothing about sports. I'll just say that right up front.
It's okay.
Okay, but please tell me, March Madness is one of the great things in life. Does it break through to your world at all?
You know, like you said, it's in the news, especially when you have those Cinderella upsets, you know, it's everywhere. But I am barely 5 feet tall. Basketball has never been important to me. It is not my sport.
What's your sport?
That's a good one. I used to be a horsewoman. I know.
Oh, like, girl. There. Oh, boom.
Esoteric things. My husband loves F1 racing. We watch a lot of F1.
Boom again.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
You are in my wheelhouse.
You were in my wheelhouse. Okay. We won't do the horses because that's just too sick and it's an addiction. F1, have you watched Drive to Survive? And do you have a favorite team or driver?
So we've watched a couple episodes. My husband is a wonderful man, but he's kind of a purist, and he has heard people complaining. You know, I'm sure the F1 organization is very happy because it's making F1 more popular here in the United States. Huge new audience for it. But the purists kind of feel like, you know, they're sensationalizing a lot of stuff, relations between. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do I have a favorite driver? What a great question. this year there's so many new kids. I'm starting to feel really old. I mean, we've been watching this for decades, so I still remember the old guys, and now they're all white haired, and you know, yeah. it's kind of
the scary. Original Schumacher.
Yes.
When in doubt, go with Lewis Hamilton. When in doubt, go with Lewis.
I do love Lewis Hamilton. Yes.
I do too. He's spectacular. Okay. No, I could go on for this forever, but we can't do this. So Alma, your latest book, Red London, which I'll hold up for our thousands of Patreon patrons. This might be my favorite. It might be my favorite. I've read The Deep. I've read Hunger. But this might be my favorite. I'm going to try really hard and really encourage Anna and David to jump in here, because I could completely geek out on all the intel stuff. But it's spies, it's turncoats, it's post-Putin Russia, which I love even thinking about post-Putin Russia, which is spectacular. And I'm reading this book and I literally could not put it down. That's such a cliche, but I couldn't put it down going, nope, this could be real. This could be real. This could be real. So it's, I just think it's stunning in that regard. But we kind of know your backstory, 30 plus years in intel and various capacities. One of the things I've thought about when I was reading this is intel is in your blood. It's in your DNA. And if you're in that world, and I haven't looked at classified information for a long time, but if you're in that world on a daily basis, it's a constant struggle. What I know, what I can share, what I know, what I shouldn't share. And your brain just gets into this. When I was in that world, not as deep as you, but when I was in the world in which I had access to a lot of classified information, every single time before I uttered a word, I would think to myself, is this something I should be saying? Even now, I mean, we just hit the 20th anniversary of Iraq, which is insane. Mm. Even now, if somebody asks me something about that stuff, Iraq, Afghanistan, you name it, I find my brain doing this governor situation. Like, oh, wait, should I be saying this? So as a writer, how do you balance, if you do, the conflict between the DNA in you, which is intel, and protecting classified information and wanting to share this world?
Well, it might be a little different for me because, you know, in the spy novels, I'm trying to really kind of give people insight into the personal side of things, mm-hmm. what it feels like for people, the emotions, the challenges, and all that sort of thing. And a little, they are less heavy on the geopolitical situation, whereas some, you know, spy novels are really heavy on the, you know, what's happening in the adversaries and what's happening in the country and all that sort of stuff. That's in my book, but I really want to talk about what it's like more for the people. So I probably go a little not as close to classified information. Both of my spy novels, of course, were reviewed by the pre-publication review board. They didn't ask for one change in either one, so I might be being a little too cautious. You mentioned Iraq, and I've been seeing a lot of tweets about the 20th anniversary. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was in the Pentagon for the phase four planning for the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. I was there in Rumsfeld's office as we were sending troops over. I could tell you so many stories of classified. You know, I don't know. Should it be classified? You see the... sorry, you kind of touched a nerve there. The post about the Texas lawyer who went off and did the deal for Reagan 40 years ago, and they just came with it now. I think of all the things that happened in Rumsfeld's DOD, and it makes you wonder, like, when is the statute of limitations going to come off?
Yeah, I think across the board, and we could completely bore every one of our 10 million listeners and viewers on this show. I am a huge believer in transparency, and my cliche, but 95% of information that is classified and withheld and protected shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And the statute of limitations on some of the stuff is nuts. Whether you're talking about, you know, Kennedy's assassination or Afghanistan, Iraq, et cetera, I think there should be so much more transparency on these things.
Well, you know, with classification, what they're trying to protect usually are sources and methods, not the actual classified information itself. So, you know, they put these 25 or 50 year timeframes on the classification, right, so that, yeah, the source is being protected. The trouble is when you retire, the longer you've been retired, the more you want to just spill your guts. I mean, I've seen other colleagues do it. It's pretty funny. I'm trying to rein it in. I'd love to write a book that's sort of a novel, that's sort of an expose of everything that went on in the Pentagon and the war between the Defense Department, Cheney, and the intelligence community. It was horrible. I was actually there in a policy position, but I was doing some support on the intelligence side, and it was brutal.
Write the book and come back. Definitely. Okay. All right. Let's talk about Red London, though, because it's fabulous. And I'm going to ask one question, and then Anna's going to go first, and then David. Turncoats. I just, you know, this is a lot about people who decided for different reasons they were going to betray their country, betray their people, maybe betray their family. What is it that causes somebody, and this kind of introduces us to the book, and you can give us the, you know, elevator pitch on the book. What is it that causes somebody to say, you know, what my country is doing is so bad that I'm going to go through the risks and perhaps some opportunities, but go through the risks of turning on my own country? So what is it about people who will betray their own country?
Well, I think you're doing them a very generous description by saying they're doing it because they're disillusioned with their own country. So I'll give you the textbook answer, and then I'll talk about my novel a little bit because it's great. Non-textbook. And that is for most people who decide they're going to become an asset of a foreign intelligence service. So for instance, CIA goes out and recruits a foreign national who has access to information that we need for one of our missions. It's usually for money. It's usually for money. I mean, they almost always ask for money. And a lot of times it's ego too. It's people who feel like they've been passed over. Their genius is not being recognized by their, you know, whoever their employer is or their wife or something like that. And it's usually that combination and they're getting their ego stroke. Isn't that sad? But if you look at all of the great turncoats that we know of, Aldridge Ames, Robert Hansen, et cetera, that's usually the case. Red London is different because it's not really a money thing. The character that Lindsay Duncan, the main character, the CIA officer, is trying to flip is the wife of a Russian oligarch. Money she's got, but she starts to realize she's a British aristocrat, I should say, you know, from sort of an impoverished family. She ends up marrying this guy and she doesn't want to think she's a gold digger. And in the book, you know, we kind of peel back the layers of her character and we see that it's a very complicated situation. But she sees her husband now for what he is. And, you know, so she's presented with this opportunity to do something right by her country, to do the right thing by Lindsay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. The story, the novel actually has a lot of interesting things in it that are extremely current, including one that most people probably aren't aware of, private intelligence. We can talk about the rise of private intelligence if you'd like. The other thing is, I don't know if I've described the book sufficiently or enough or not, but people who love spy novels may feel like there's something familiar about it. And that's because I actually patterned it on The Night Manager by John le Carré, which is one of my favorite spy novels. Wow. It's where you take, you know, the hero and you drop them into the viper's nest. In this, Lindsay actually gets pulled into the household of the Russian oligarch, becomes part of the wife's entourage. And she's surrounded by, you know, these horrible, bloodthirsty people all the time. And, you know, it's trying to succeed in her.
Being a real human being, Lindsay, our heroine, has mixed feelings about what she's doing. She has some doubts about what she's doing.
I have to say, one of the most interesting things a case officer said to me once was we were doing some representational event together, and I really liked her. First of all, she was a woman. She was a little younger than me, but she was very thoughtful. I don't want to piss off any case officers out there, but they can really be, you know, kind of cowboys. And she was the most thoughtful one I'd ever met. And she said to me at one point when we were alone, she said, you know, so, you know, you don't like case officers, do you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She says, don't all analysts think that case officers are bad people? because that's their job, is to manipulate and deceive in order to get. Now, some of them will tell you they don't, right? That they try to be as honest as they can with their assets. But still, there's always this degree of manipulation. And yeah, that's what the job is about. So yeah, sometimes, because I remember that woman, I make Lindsay sometimes feel bad about the fact that she has to deceive somebody, even though it's in her nation's best interest.
Right. Even though she knows it's her job. Okay, Anna and Alma, I don't know if I've told you this, but one of the reasons Anna is with us tonight, other than we love her and her book, The House in the Pines, is fantastic, is
I've heard great things.
We subjected her to this horrible thing called 60 Seconds More, which we'll subject you to at the end of the show. And we asked for writers who inspire, and you are one of the writers that inspires Anna. So Anna, to the woman that inspires you, what have you got for her?
Well, I'm a huge fan. The most recent book, I haven't read Red London yet, but The Hunger is one of my favorite horror novels. The Deep, both of those two books, to me, are just incredibly inspiring in the way that you were drawing from something, you know, a real historical event or period. And you were able to capture all of the things that horrify and compel me about those events and then spin it into this incredible story that's rooted in fact. And yet clearly you're spinning in a lot of fiction. So that's what I just love about the books. And I'm just really excited. I haven't read Red London yet, but it kind of sounds like you're doing something similar where you're drawing from history and from real facts, but taking them in your own direction. So I just think that's a really beautiful, I don't really know any other writers who do that. And that's why I listed you as one of the people who inspires me when I do my own writing.
That is so incredibly kind of you. And it's so good to hear. You know how it is when a book comes out, you are just, I hate it. It's the worst, you know, time. You worry in the weeks running up to it, and then it comes out and you wonder if anybody is listening, right? I'm always convinced that nobody reads my books. So that was so kind of you. I have written three historical horror novels, which all are grounded in actual history, but then add this sort of what if, you know, that has sort of either a horror or a supernatural flavor to it. But a lot of people think when they hear horror, they immediately think of like teenage slasher films and stuff like that. And they're not like that at all. It's just sort of lightly. You know, I was thinking when I wrote Red London and I started to do the promotion, and if I get the chance, I talk about the actual history that, you know, enabled the oligarchs to come to power and for them to just take over London. And I realized, damn, I do put history in like all my books. And I wonder what that is. I'm supposed to be writing fiction. Can I brag a little bit about one book that you didn't
mention?
One that came out last year, my last historical horror, is The Fervor, mm-hmm. which is about the Japanese internment.
Right.
And it's a very personal thing for me because my mother is Japanese and my husband's entire family were interned. Wow. And so, you know, for decades, we've learned the stories. And so I really was thrilled to get the opportunity to really show what, you know, what the internment was like. And I do a historical talk that kind of breaks down why the camps are not what most Americans think, why we rush to do the camps. But just recently, that book has been nominated for Best Novel by the Horror Writers Association and Best wow. Novel by the Thriller Writers Association, which is crazy. You know, there's two completely different genres, one book. I just can't believe it. I am so thrilled because I love that book. But it's a hard sell, you know, it's the internment.
A hard sell and slightly horrifying that those were the genres that really wrapped their arms around it, right? I mean, it's a really, really important story, often overlooked by this nation's history. So that's a little scary. David, over to you, my friend.
So Alma, I have a couple of questions, but the one I'm interested in, I don't think it's giving away too much of the plot because it's fairly early in the book, is that this is kind of post-Putin Russia, right?
So great.
And which is kind of inspiring in a way, right? And I always hear this, you never know, because you don't know if this is just what people do in movies and books, but the idea of whether it's CIA or FBI or whomever kind of gaming out what would happen if so-and-so were deposed or if so-and-so wasn't here. Is that, does that happen a lot? Is that a common thing? Like, what would our next move be if Putin suddenly just disappeared? What would we do?
Yeah, that's a big thing. So much so that, sort of trying to project what's going to happen is the job of every analyst. Big things like, you know, looking at what happens after Putin or what are the steps that we would want to see to indicate that he was being deposed, all that kind of stuff. The national intelligence managers, you know, run big scenarios. A friend of mine is actually a big war game. He was a big war game expert for him. He retired and now he does it on the outside. So they do lots and lots of scenarios and war games. They also have, CIA has a team called the Red Cell, whose sole job it is to kind of play devil's advocate and bring up things that, you know, maybe the analysts who've been following a target for 20 years, you know, just don't want. It actually came out of WMD, and it was one of the lessons learned, right, that we needed to take more risks in our analysis. So it absolutely does happen. But how it came in this book is I had already turned in the manuscript before Russia invaded Ukraine.
Yeah.
And my editor came back and said, this isn't going to work because, you know, it's already in, you know, people won't feel satisfied. So I tried to think of something new, you know, like little changes, made that. But the events on the ground moved so fast with the invasion that I kept getting overrun. Now, part of my career, I worked war rooms, so I know what it's like to try to keep up with a war. What is happening? And I'm like, this is not sustainable. I said, I've got to get ahead of this. So then I thought, what is it that everybody wants to see? Putin disappear. So I'll give it to him. Right. But then what if the cure is worse than the disease? So the new president, Viktor Kosygin, is also ex-KGB. Not a lot is known about him. He's saying all the right things. You know, Russia wants to be a good international citizen. But MI6 and CIA don't believe him. And so I'm setting him up to be a really great villain for the next few books.
Completely set up. And I have to say, on David's point, I'm reading the book, and every time I'd see some reference to Putin being gone, the little person in me is like, yay. And then you'd hear more about Kosygin and go, oh, this could be bad. This could be bad. This book, people, is so plausible. It is so plausible. It is so plausible. It's stunning. Okay, let's get you out with this on Red London, Alma. It's just so fabulous.
Thank you.
Throughout the book, the word seduction kept coming to mind to me. It just kept popping up in my head. Seduction of sources, of friends, of potential assets, romantic interests. Was that a deliberate, this is a really stupid question. Was that a deliberate subliminal threat on your part? Or is that just part of the reality of human nature, in which case I'm going to be crushed?
I think it's part of the reality of human nature. I mean, it's part of the spy business, right? You're trying to make this other person like you. You're trying to make them want to please you. And then I really wanted to investigate. I have this thing about bad men. I'm really good at writing bad boys.
Yeah.
So
most of them are. Let's just, come on. Come on, ladies. Come on.
I know.
Yeah, sorry.
I swear.
Sorry.
And then you say, what am I going to date a nice guy? I'm standing here.
I married a really nice guy. No, I personally, right, I like nice guys. But I can write bad boys really well. So I have two. I'm having so much fun. So there's the British agent that Lindsay had an affair with, which kind of messed her up. And she's starting to see that maybe there's something else going on that she didn't realize. And then the Russian asset who's turned a mole for them, who is a real bad guy. He's a war criminal, but he just oozes sex appeal.
Yep.
To the point where people, the editorial staff keep asking me, are you going to put more Tarasenko in?
makes you want to smoke a cigarette with them. I'm just telling you, people, when you read this book, you'll want to smoke a cigarette with them.
So I don't know if I should mention this, but we did just accept an offer on the rights for a TV show.
Oh, excellent.
I, I can't wait to see who they cast as Tarasenko.
Okay, Tarasenko, tell me. Okay, I'm going over time. I apologize. I think he's the one early on in the book. Again, this is not giving too much away. I think one of the things you say about him, an asset to the CIA and a traitor to his country. Was that the line about Tarasenko? He was fabulous.
Yes, he is. It's a very calculated thing. He, in the first book, I don't know how much to give away. Basically, he's working for a very bad Russian. One of the things at CIA, because I was there when Kazi killed folks right out on Route 123, right in front of the building. And by the time I retired, they had tracked him down, and then they did an in-house documentary on it. And I really saw the dedication that CIA has. They, if you kill one of our people, they don't care how long it takes. They're going to track you down. And so that's what I had set up, that this Russian who Tarasenko works for had killed a chief of station 10 years earlier and then hightailed it back to Russia. And he's kind of ungettable. And they've been trying to get him all this time. And so Tarasenko agrees to give up his boss because he wants his boss eliminated. He wants him out from over his head. It's this personal sort of vendetta. And he's willing to be a traitor to his country for
it. It's very personal. Anna, does this give you inspiration for some work going forward?
It inspires me to want to read the book.
Yeah, there you go. Bingo.
Yeah, I love the intrigue. I love everything that I'm hearing just makes me want to read it more.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, but the thing I keep going back to, you hear intrigue, you hear thriller, and you think it's out there, fantasy land. I'm not kidding. On every single page, I was going, yep, sure, that could, yeah, absolutely. It probably has happened. Absolutely. The whole thing with oligarchs, I could go on forever about oligarchs and the fact that in the last, couple of years, about 10 of the top Putin oligarchs have mysteriously fallen out of hospital windows, been dropped off the back of a boat.
Always there was from one here very at the high distances. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there was one here at the West End in DC, like the fourth floor of the Park Hyatt or something, you know, out the window. These people need to stay away from windows, but there's a lot going on and it makes the book very, very realistic, I thought.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny, but I actually kind of earmarked this whole thing back in 1994. When the Brits decided that they created this new class of visa that would allow foreigners to stay in their country if they invested about £1 million in the economy. Well, this was right at the same time that the Soviet Union was imploding and this whole new class of swindlers were born and they became the oligarchs. And you could see at the time that the Brits were setting themselves up for a huge problem. And you just kind of wondered how it was going to play out. Well, it took 20 years, but now we see, you know, they poisoned Sergei Skripal on British territory. And now finally with the invasion, the Brits realize that we have to do something about it. But they're incredibly well dug in. And not just in England, of course, they're actually investigating it in the United States too, where real estate is being used to launder oligarchs' money.
Sure. Yeah. David Sports. I mean, there are a lot of big time.
Oh, sure.
Russians, a big time Russian money in sports, right?
Well, yeah. Well, it's frankly, it's more the Saudis right now. It's sports washing that's going on where they're just throwing, you know, the LIV golf tour is all Saudi money. I mean, this is going on all over the world. The soccer is part of it too. They're buying soccer teams and they're trying to launder all of their money. And make it clean now. It's terrible. It's terrible. And people are taking the money. See, to Alma's point, I mean, sometimes people do it for the money. Are doing stuff for the money.
Okay, Alma, you got to have your next one. You got to have a sports thread in there. Because Anna will want to come back and really go deep on the sports angle.
Basketball, Anna. Is that what I should do? Basketball.
Get some football in there if you can.
Okay, I got to
think about soccer would be good. That would be good because it's international.
Yes.
Lots of people with lots of money that would love to buy a World Cup.
Ooh. Well, and I think a couple oligarchs own a couple of Premier League teams, don't they? Yeah.
Yes, they do.
That's going to end soon.
Indeed.
Okay, Alma, the book is Red London. It's fabulous. Really, just so much fun reading. I cannot wait for the series. We'll have to have you come back and talk to us about casting for that. We a little bit of housekeeping, and then we'll sign off. So we are back next week with Emily St. John Mandel, who's pretty spectacular. She's coming back with Sea of Tranquility. Alert listeners to the show, Well, remember back in the early days of the show, ladies, we would have book reports. Mine was the worst, the tragic one. Before the pandemic.
Done better.
Michael Kornheiser. No, it was tragic. I've got PTSD on that, David. Michael Kornheiser, who was a regular on the show and is coming back next week, did a book report on Emily St. John Mandel's book, Station 11. It was before the pandemic, but right. The book is about a swine flu epidemic that wipes out most of the Earth's population. So a little prescient on her part. And she is coming back with Sea of Tranquility, which is another one of these only certain human beings can think outside the confines of reality, which she does. So we're pretty happy about that. In the meantime, everybody, May 20th, Gaithersburg Book Festival, Borough Park. It's free. It'll be spectacular weather. Ana Reyes, thank you so much for coming back. Hope you come back again.
Thank you for having me.
David, hi to all the gnats. We wish them the best.
I will say hello to all 72 of them that are in camp.
Close personal friends. Alma and Ana, thank you for participating in Chatter on Sports. We're so glad you could join us. Hey, Claude, please give Manny our best.
Will
do. Thank him so much. We will have him back. And everybody, thank you for listening, watching, and stay well. And we're out.
Don't forget, you can get bonus content from Chatter on Books and join us for live virtual recordings. Simply consider becoming a member of Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chatteronbooks and enjoy access to all kinds of bonus content and live recordings. That's patreon.com/chatteronbooks. Sign up now and feel the surge of deep satisfaction that comes from being a patron of the arts and a supporter of this podcast.